A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's been thinking about The Simpsons, the show pretty much everyone of a certain generation grew up watching. His point is that when you revisit it as an adult, the whole premise gets strange. Homer Simpson is an archetypal mindless man, yet he's entrusted with monitoring a nuclear facility. His parenting is cavalier. His relationship with Bart never really breaks. Nothing catastrophic ever happens. The characters are unevolving, two-dimensional. And yet the show is wonderful, and it's clearly intended for adults. The question he's asking is, what is there to be learned about scriptwriting and character development from the success of the show? Why does simplification, even flatness, work so effortlessly here?
There's a lot to pull apart here because you've got multiple things happening at once. You've got a show that ran for over 35 years, more than 700 episodes, and it built a world so complete that people described feeling instantly at home in it. That's not an accident of nostalgia. That's a structural achievement.
35 years. That means the show's been on the air longer than some of its writers have been alive.
It premiered in December 1989. The Berlin Wall had just come down. And it's still running. The longevity alone forces us to take it seriously as a piece of craft. But the specific thing Daniel's prompt gets at, this tension between flat characters and genuine emotional resonance, that's the whole puzzle.
Because we're trained to think flat characters are a flaw. Every screenwriting book tells you characters need arcs, they need growth. They need to face their flaws and change. And here's this show where Homer has learned the same lesson about being a better father roughly 40 times and forgotten it by the next episode.
And that's the key to the whole thing. The Simpsons operates on what's called a reset button structure. Every episode ends with the status quo restored. Homer can become an astronaut, meet his mother, join a grunge band, become the sanitation commissioner. By the next episode, he's back on the couch, back at Sector 7G, back to strangling Bart. This isn't laziness. It's a deliberate, formal choice.
The eternal return of the couch gag.
And this structure does something very specific to the viewer's relationship with the characters. When you know the characters won't fundamentally change, you stop watching for plot and start watching for recognition. You're not asking what happens next, you're asking how they'll be themselves this time.
That's a really useful distinction. Plot-driven versus recognition-driven watching.
It's the difference between a novel and a comic strip. In a novel, Elizabeth Bennet changes. In a comic strip, Charlie Brown will always have the football pulled away. Both forms are legitimate. The Simpsons figured out how to bring comic strip logic to a 30-minute narrative format.
That's the thing. It's not a three-panel strip. It's a full narrative. There are setups, complications, reversals. The machinery of plot is all there. It just doesn't accumulate.
Which is a harder trick than it looks. You have to make the audience care about a story whose outcome they already know, emotionally speaking. Homer will be Homer, Bart will be Bart, the plant won't melt down. So the pleasure has to come from somewhere else.
Where does it come from?
I'd say three places. One is the density of jokes. The show at its peak was packing in something like 20 to 25 jokes per minute, which is absurd. Two is the specificity of the world. Springfield isn't generic. It's got a tire fire, a box factory, a bad part of town, a monorail that may or may not exist, a founder named Jebediah Springfield who may or may not have been a pirate. Three is the way the flatness of the characters actually enables a kind of emotional clarity.
Say more about that third one.
Because Homer doesn't have a complex inner life, his moments of feeling become incredibly legible. When he sits on the hood of his car staring at the stars after his mother leaves, you feel it precisely because you're not sorting through layers of psychology. The emotion is right on the surface. It's like a stained glass window. Simple shapes, bright colors, direct transmission.
The musical equivalent of beige wallpaper, except when it suddenly isn't.
The flatness isn't a bug. It's the medium through which the emotional signal travels with zero interference.
We've got a show that does three counterintuitive things. It resets every episode. It builds characters who don't evolve. And it uses that flatness to deliver emotion more directly than psychologically complex characters often can. That's already a useful set of lessons for anyone writing fiction.
Let's get concrete about the writing lessons, though. Because Daniel's question was specifically about script writing and character development, what do you actually take away if you're sitting down to write something?
Lesson one seems to be, pick your contract with the audience and honor it.
That's the foundation. The Simpsons told you in episode one what kind of show it was. Actually, it told you in the Tracy Ullman shorts before that. The contract was, these characters will not grow, the world will not change, and we will make you laugh. Audiences don't resent the reset button when the contract is clear. They resent it when a show promises stakes and consequences and then chickens out.
The eighth season of Game of Thrones problem.
Right. When you build a show around consequences and then abandon consequences, the audience feels cheated. The Simpsons never promised consequences. It promised a half hour in Springfield, and it delivered that for decades.
Lesson two, specificity is a substitute for depth.
Oh, that's good.
If you can't make characters deep, because the format won't allow it, because the contract forbids it, you can make them specific. Burns isn't a complex villain with a tragic backstory. He's a 104-year-old man who releases the hounds, blocks out the sun, and has a room full of teddy bears named Bobo. The specificity does the work that psychological depth would do in a different kind of show.
The specificity compounds. Every time Mr. Burns forgets Homer's name, every time he answers the phone with a hoy hoy, every time Smithers hovers just a little too close, these aren't character developments, they're character deposits. They accumulate into a richer and richer portrait without ever changing the underlying shape.
It's like adding detail to a painting without altering the composition.
The writer's room understood this instinctively. John Swartzwelder, who wrote more episodes than anyone, 59 of them, was famous for writing scripts where the characters just did the thing they always do, but in increasingly baroque circumstances. Homer gets a pet lobster. Homer joins the Navy. Homer goes to clown college. The character doesn't change. The frame around him gets more elaborate.
Swartzwelder is a fascinating case. He wrote some of the most beloved episodes and then retired to write self-published absurdist novels. The man understood something about the form that most writing instruction actively discourages.
Which is what?
That consistency beats growth sometimes. That a character who is perfectly themselves in every situation is more satisfying than a character who is constantly becoming someone else.
There's a third lesson here, too, which is that the world can do the evolving for you. The Simpsons didn't need Homer to grow because Springfield itself kept expanding. By season 8 or 9, you had a town with dozens of fully realized secondary characters. Apu, Moe, Skinner, Krusty, Flanders, Wiggum, Lovejoy, Quimby, Willie, Otto, Lionel Hutz, Troy McClure. The richness migrated from the main characters to the ensemble.
The ensemble as a distributed character development system.
And this is a genuine scriptwriting insight. If you're writing a show where the leads are deliberately static, you can offload the sense of discovery onto the world around them. Every new secondary character, every new location, every new institution in Springfield, they all added texture without requiring Homer to have an epiphany.
The Quickie Mart alone is a masterclass in this. You know exactly what kind of place it is the moment you see it. The squishy machine, the expired hot dogs, the armed robbery profile of the clerk. It's more vivid than most shows' entire settings, and it's just a convenience store.
Apu alone, and I know the character became controversial later, and the show's handling of that has its own complicated history, but as a piece of character craft, Apu is remarkable. He's a convenience store clerk with a PhD in computer science, 8 children, a devout Hindu practice, and an encyclopedic knowledge of expired food pricing. That's not a stereotype, that's a dossier.
The PhD is the detail that makes the whole thing work. Without it, he's a type. With it, he's a person.
The show never made a big deal of it. It was just there, in the background, one more deposit in the character account. That's lesson 4, maybe. Trust the audience to notice.
Don't underline.
Don't underline. The Simpsons almost never tells you what to feel or what to notice. It just puts the thing there and moves on. The jokes are the same way. They don't pause for the laugh. There's no rim shot. The density of the writing assumes you're paying attention, and the reward for paying attention is catching more.
Which is a form of respect. The show treats its audience as smart.
It's clearly intended for adults, as Daniel noted. That's worth dwelling on because it was genuinely unusual at the time. An animated primetime sitcom for adults that basically didn't exist in 1989. The Flintstones had been decades earlier, but that was a different thing. The Simpsons arrived and immediately started doing jokes about Kierkegaard, about the Smoot-Hawley Terror Fact, about Citizen Kane.
The Smoot-Hawley reference. That's in the Camp Krusty episode, isn't it?
It's in a few places, actually. The point is, the show never talked down. It assumed its audience had cultural knowledge, or at least wouldn't mind if some jokes flew over their heads. That's a scriptwriting lesson in itself. Write for the smartest person in the room and trust everyone else to keep up.
There's a humility in that, oddly. The writers aren't trying to prove they're clever. They're just being clever and assuming you are too.
The show's politics, such as they are, operate the same way. They're there if you look, but they're never the point. The show has satirized conservatives and liberals, corporations and unions, religion and secularism, environmentalism and industry. The consistent target isn't any particular ideology. It's hypocrisy and self-importance.
Which is why the show has aged better than more explicitly political comedies. When the target is human folly rather than a specific administration, you don't have an expiration date.
Burns works as a satire of corporate greed, whether the president is a Republican or a Democrat. The Springfield Power Plant is a joke about regulatory capture and institutional incompetence that doesn't depend on who's in charge of the EPA. The show found a way to be deeply cynical about institutions without being partisan about it.
Deeply affectionate about people. That's the weird balance. The show is cynical about everything. Government, business, religion, media, education, and yet it's warm about the family at the center. Homer and Marge love each other. The kids are a mess, but they're not broken. The family unit is the one thing the satire never fully punctures.
There's an episode, Lisa's Substitute, Season 2, where Lisa's teacher, Mr. Bergstrom, is the first adult who really sees her intelligence. He leaves, and she's devastated. Homer tries to comfort her and completely fails because he doesn't understand her at all. And then, at the end, he just sits with her. No wisdom, no lesson. And it's one of the most emotionally effective scenes in television.
Because Homer's flatness, his inability to be anything other than what he is, becomes the point. He can't become sophisticated, he can't offer insight, but he can be there. And the simplicity of that lands harder than a more articulate character's speech would.
Which brings us back to the core paradox. The show's characters are unevolving, two-dimensional, and yet capable of moments of genuine emotional power.
I think it's because the flatness lowers your defenses. You're not braced for a psychological journey. You're watching a cartoon, and then the cartoon punches you in the stomach.
The formal term for this is defamiliarization, making the familiar strange so you can see it fresh. But The Simpsons does something like the reverse. It makes the strange familiar, and then, inside that familiar space, it reintroduces strangeness. The characters are cartoons, the world is absurd, and then suddenly a real feeling shows up and it catches you completely off guard.
The lo-fi girl of television writing.
I don't even know what that means, but I'm going to agree with it.
I'm saying the show is aware of its own artifice in a way that makes the genuine moments hit harder. The fact that these are yellow cartoon people with four fingers makes the real emotion feel more real, not less.
There's a term from theater studies, verfremdungseffekt, Brecht's alienation effect, where you deliberately remind the audience that they're watching a constructed work so they engage critically rather than emotionally. The Simpsons somehow achieves the opposite. It reminds you constantly that it's a cartoon. Through visual gags, through self-referential jokes, through impossible physics, and yet the emotional engagement is stronger, not weaker.
Because the cartoonist gives you permission to feel without embarrassment.
That's exactly it. There's no coolness barrier. You're not watching a prestige drama where you need to maintain ironic distance. You're watching a show where a man gets hit in the face with a rake and says, "Doh," and then 5 minutes later you're tearing up because he's saying goodbye to his mom. The tonal whiplash is the point.
Let's talk about the writing process itself, because I think there's something instructive there too. The Simpsons writer's room was famously intense. They'd spend hours on a single joke, rewriting and rewriting. George Meyer, who was kind of the secret weapon of the early seasons, was known for obsessing over word choice at a level that seems almost pathological.
Meyer is a fascinating figure. He didn't take showrunner credit, he didn't do press, but the other writers consistently pointed to him as the person who shaped the show's sensibility. He had this concept of the joke behind the joke, the idea that every gag should have a second layer that rewards closer attention.
Give me an example.
There's a moment where Homer is watching a commercial for a product called Malk, M-A-L-K, which is clearly a knockoff milk substitute with questionable ingredients. The surface joke is just that it's a weird product. The second layer is that the commercial features a testimonial from someone saying, "My bones are so brittle." The third layer is that the product is called Malk, which is what you'd get if you tried to say milk with a mouthful of whatever Malk is made of. Three jokes stacked vertically in a 2-second gag.
Most people will catch one or two of those layers, but the density means repeat viewing keeps paying off.
That's the syndication secret. The show was designed for an era when episodes would air dozens of times. The writers knew that kids would watch after school, that it would run in reruns forever. So they built the scripts to reward the fifth viewing just as much as the first.
Which is a lesson for anyone writing anything that might be reread or rewatched. Build in the hidden load-bearing beams.
The other thing about the writer's room, and this is well documented in interviews and in John Ortved's book on the show, is that they operated on a principle of ruthless honesty. If a joke didn't work, someone said so. There was no protecting your ego. The best idea won, regardless of who it came from.
That's rare in any creative field.
It's incredibly rare. And it only works when the culture values the work over the individual credit. The Simpsons writer's room had that for a long stretch, roughly seasons 3-8, which most fans and critics consider the golden age.
The Conan O'Brien years.
Conan was there for a relatively short time. He wrote some iconic episodes, including the monorail one, but he was part of that culture. The room was competitive in the right way. Everyone was trying to make everyone else laugh. If you pitched something that bombed, you heard about it, but the next pitch was all that mattered.
Lesson 5, build a culture where the best idea wins. And lesson 6, write for the fifth viewing.
Let me add lesson 7, which is specific to comedy writing but applies more broadly. The Simpsons understands that specificity is funnier than generality. Homer eats a donut is not a joke. Homer eats a donut from Lard Lad, a giant donut-shaped mascot that comes to life and terrorizes the town. That's a joke, or at least the setup for one.
The giant donut mascot is a good example because it's simultaneously absurd and completely logical within the world. Of course Springfield has a giant donut mascot. Of course it becomes sentient. The show earns its absurdity by being consistent about it.
Internal consistency is the scaffolding that lets absurdity stand up. Springfield has rules. The rules are strange, but they're stable. The nuclear power plant is always incompetent. The police are always useless. The town is always on the verge of some disaster. Once you establish those rules, you can push them to wild extremes without losing the audience.
This is what separates The Simpsons from random surrealism. Random surrealism is easy. Just throw weird things at the wall. But The Simpsons' weirdness always feels motivated by the world and the characters. Homer doesn't just randomly go to space. He goes to space because NASA needs an average American for a publicity stunt, and he fits the profile, and the whole thing is a satire of the space program's public relations.
The premise is absurd, but the chain of causation is logical. That's the secret to a lot of great comedy. The Simpsons, at its best, is a show where absolutely ridiculous things happen for completely understandable reasons.
Let's circle back to character development, because I think we've been dancing around a point that deserves to be stated directly. The Simpsons suggests that character development, in the sense of fundamental change, may be overrated as a storytelling value.
That's a strong claim.
But look at the evidence. The show has run for more than 3 decades with characters who don't fundamentally change, and it has produced some of the most emotionally resonant moments in television. If character development were essential to good storytelling, this should be impossible.
I think the distinction is between character development and character revelation. The Simpsons doesn't do development. Homer doesn't become a better person. But it does do revelation. We learn things about Homer that deepen our understanding of who he already is.
The difference between changing and unfolding.
In the early seasons, Homer is just a boorish dad. By season 7 or 8, we know that he was raised by a single father after his mother left, that he's deeply insecure about his intelligence, that he loves Marge but doesn't know how to express it well, that he's capable of surprising tenderness and surprising cruelty. None of this is character development. It's all backstory and elaboration. But it feels like depth.
The lesson for writers is, you can create the experience of depth without arc if you're willing to keep adding layers to the static character.
The layers have to be consistent with what came before. You can't suddenly reveal that Homer is a secret genius. Well, you can, and they did. There's an episode where a crayon is removed from his brain and he becomes brilliant, but the episode ends with him choosing to put the crayon back in. The revelation doesn't change him. It just illuminates something about him.
The crayon episode is actually a perfect example of the show's philosophy. Homer becomes intelligent, discovers that intelligence makes him unhappy and alienates him from his friends, and chooses to return to his old self. The show is explicitly arguing that growth isn't always desirable.
Which is a deeply conservative idea in a non-political sense. The show is skeptical of the premise that change equals improvement. It's skeptical of self-improvement culture, of ambition, of the idea that you should be constantly striving to become a better version of yourself. Homer is fine as he is. The show loves him for it.
That's countercultural. We live in a world that's obsessed with optimization, with growth, with becoming your best self. The Simpsons says, "What if your current self, with all its flaws, is worthy of love?"
It's the sitcom version of grace. You don't earn it. You don't deserve it. You just get it.
Which is why the show can be simultaneously the most cynical and the most warm-hearted thing on television. It has no illusions about human nature, and it loves humans anyway.
Let's talk about what doesn't work, because the show isn't perfect, and the lessons are more useful if we're honest about the failures. The later seasons, and this is widely discussed, lost something. The writing got broader, the satire got less sharp, the emotional moments got more forced. I think a few things. One is that the density dropped. The show stopped trusting the audience to keep up and started explaining jokes. Two is that the cultural references became more topical and less timeless. Celebrity guest stars playing themselves rather than characters, jokes about whatever happened that week. Three is that the show started taking its own emotional moments too seriously, underlining them rather than letting them land and moving on.
The Simpsons became self-important about its own legacy.
Which is the exact opposite of what made it great. The early show never acted like it was important. It just was. The later show keeps telling you it's an institution.
Lesson 8. Don't believe your own press.
Lesson 9. When you start explaining the jokes, you've already lost. The moment the show has to tell you why something is funny, the contract with the audience is broken. The Simpsons at its peak never explained. It just did the thing and trusted you.
There's a writing principle here that applies beyond comedy. The moment you stop trusting your audience, your work gets worse. It gets longer, more explanatory, less elegant. You start adding scenes that exist only to make sure everyone's following along, and those scenes are dead weight.
The novelist Elmore Leonard had a rule: try to leave out the part that readers tend to skip. The Simpsons, at its best, left out everything skippable. Every scene, every line, every frame had a reason to exist. The density was the discipline.
Let's pull all this together into something useful. If someone's writing a script, comedy or otherwise, what do they actually take from The Simpsons?
I'd say the core lessons are, 1. Be clear about your contract with the audience and honor it. If you're writing a show about static characters, own that. Don't fake arcs. 2. Specificity is a substitute for depth when depth isn't available to you. Make your characters specific, make your world specific, and the richness will accumulate. 3. The world can evolve even when the characters don't. Build out your ensemble, your setting, your institutions. 4. Trust the audience to notice. Don't underline, don't explain. 5. Write for the fifth viewing. Build in layers that reward attention. 6. Internal consistency enables external absurdity. The weirder you want to be, the more stable your rules need to be. 7. Character revelation can do the work that character development usually does. You don't have to change your characters to deepen them.
8. The emotional moments work best when they're surrounded by irreverence. The contrast is what makes them land.
That's a good one. The show never does a very special episode where everyone learns something. The emotional beats happen inside episodes that are also making jokes about radioactive waste and incompetent police work. The sincerity is smuggled in.
Smuggled sincerity is a great term. It describes a whole mode of writing that's underappreciated. The sincerity that announces itself is preachy. The sincerity that sneaks up on you is powerful.
This connects to something Daniel mentioned about the show not trying to seduce you with raw, crass humor or grand designs. The Simpsons never begs for your approval. It never tries too hard. The emotional moments feel earned because the show isn't desperate for you to feel them.
The show's posture is almost indifferent. Here's a joke, here's another joke, here's a moment of genuine pathos. Back to the jokes. It doesn't check to see if you're crying. It just moves on.
Which paradoxically makes you more likely to cry. The lack of manipulation is what makes the manipulation work.
The anti-manipulation. Manipulation.
And that's a hard thing to teach. It's more of a sensibility than a technique. But I think you can cultivate it by being willing to undercut your own sincere moments, to leave them slightly unprotected. Don't build a fence around the emotional beat. Just put it there and walk away.
The show also benefits from something that's hard to replicate, which is time. The Simpsons has had 35 years to build up the character deposits we talked about. A new show doesn't have that. Is there a way to get the effect faster?
I think you can compress it by being more deliberate about the deposits. Every scene is an opportunity to add a detail that will pay off later. Not in a plot sense, but in a recognition sense. The first time you show a character's apartment, you can tell the audience 10 things about them without a word of exposition. The Simpsons did this visually, but you can do it in dialogue too. A character who mentions their failed sourdough starter, their ex-wife's new husband's podcast, their collection of vintage harmonica cases. Those are plot points, but they accumulate into a person.
The sourdough starter is the 21st century version of the PhD at the Quickie Mart.
It's exactly that. A single, specific, slightly surprising detail that implies a whole life outside the frame.
Here's a question, though. Does this approach only work for comedy? Can you do the static character, recognition-driven, deposit-based thing in drama?
I think you can, but it's harder. Drama audiences have been trained to expect arcs. If a dramatic character doesn't change, audiences often feel cheated. But there are counterexamples. Sherlock Holmes doesn't change, Columbo doesn't change. Many detective characters are deliberately static. The pleasure is watching them do their thing, not watching them grow.
Procedurals in general.
Law and Order ran for 20 years with characters who were largely static. The recognition pleasure is, here's how Lenny Briscoe will react to this particular crime scene. You're not watching for growth. You're watching for the performance of a consistent self in varying circumstances.
The Simpsons model applies to any show where the core pleasure is character recognition rather than character transformation, which is a bigger category than we usually admit.
I'd argue it's most to television, actually, even shows that have arcs. The arcs are often much shallower than we pretend. Walter White changes, sure, but he's the exception. Most TV characters change very slowly, and the week-to-week pleasure is seeing them be themselves.
The industry has a bias toward talking about arcs because arcs sound sophisticated, but audiences keep showing up for the static pleasures.
Because recognition is a deeper pleasure than surprise in the long run. Surprise wears off. You can only be surprised once. Recognition deepens with repetition. Every time you see Homer choke Bart, you're not surprised, but you're satisfied. The world is in order. Homer is Homer. Bart is Bart.
It's the same reason people rewatch comfort shows. They're not looking for novelty. They're looking for the familiar thrill of characters being exactly who they are.
That's the final lesson, maybe. The one that's hardest for writers to accept. Audiences don't always want you to challenge them. Sometimes they want you to welcome them home.
A show as a place. Not a journey, but a destination.
Springfield as a second hometown. You visit, you know everyone, nothing has changed, and that's the point.
Which brings us back to Daniel's observation about the show, feeling like a parallel world where you're instantly at home. That's not an accident of nostalgia or childhood viewing. That's the result of very deliberate craft choices. The reset button, the static characters, the accumulating deposits, the density of jokes, the specificity of the world. The show was engineered to feel like home.
Engineered to feel effortless, which is the hardest kind of engineering.
The glockenspiel of corporate approachability, but for emotional architecture.
I'm going to need you to unpack that one.
I'm saying the show constructed a feeling of effortlessness through massive effort. The writer's room spending hours on a single word choice. That's not effortless. But the result feels like it just happened, like Springfield was always there and the show just pointed a camera at it.
That's the definition of craft, really. Making the difficult look inevitable.
That's probably the meta lesson for anyone writing anything. The Simpsons makes it look easy. It's not. It's one of the hardest shows ever written. The ease is the achievement.
To answer the prompt directly, what's to be learned about scriptwriting and character development from The Simpsons? That flatness can be a feature, not a bug. That specificity and consistency can substitute for psychological depth. That the reset button is a legitimate narrative tool when the contract with the audience is clear. That recognition is a deeper long-term pleasure than surprise. That emotion lands harder when it's surrounded by irreverence. And that building a world where audiences feel at home requires more craft, not less, than building one that constantly changes.
That Homer Simpson, the archetypal mindless man, is one of the most carefully constructed characters in television history. The mindlessness is a performance. The construction behind it is anything but. And now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
During the Cold War, a farmer in Labrador maintained a strain of Red Fife wheat passed down from Scottish settlers, cultivating it in isolation for over 40 years, a single-family genetic arc that survived the entire era of industrial agricultural consolidation without ever entering a seed bank or government program.
I have questions about how Hilbert finds these things.
A wheat arc in Labrador. I'm going to just let that sit there.
This has been My Weird Props. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flemingtop. If you enjoyed this, leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. It helps. You can find every episode at myweirdprompts.com. I'm Korn.
I'm Herman Poppleberry. We'll be back next time.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Props, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.